Thank you for tuning in to Summary Judgment, where Austin personal injury attorneys Josh Fogelman and Aaron Von Fladern of FVF Law discuss the ins, outs, and in-betweens of personal injury cases. Hey, Josh.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, do you remember why we named this Summary Judgment?
No.
Let me give you a better question. Do you remember whose idea it was to name this Summary Judgment?
Probably your idea.
Okay. I'm summarily judging you for the first answer. But you were right on the second one. And part of our firm's ethos is transparency, right? So in full transparency, the answer was, it sounded kind of cool. And it sounded like legal. But then we looked back on it and we said, you know what? It is. We are like summarizing what's going on in our field. So there's like a tie-in there, right?
That makes sense.
Okay. Margaret, what's your take on that?
I love the name.
Okay. Well, with that, I'm going to get out of the way. It's Margaret's show today. We are back talking about FVF and its origins and how it grew up. And then right now, how we got into the COVID era. And with that, I will pass the mic.
Thank you, Aaron. Thanks for having me back, you guys. This is a really interesting topic because COVID hit when we were about to have, or we're in our sixth year. Is that right? It would have been we were 5.5 years old.
Yep.
So from a startup perspective, we were just kind of hitting our peak as far as staffing goes. I think we were at probably the largest staff size that we had had to date. We were occupying the largest piece of real estate that we had to date. So on March 13th, 2019, we had what would be our last in-person staff meeting for a very long time. And so I just want us to kind of like sit back and think about initially, what was our response? What was our emotional response first? And then maybe we can talk a little bit about what our business response was.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when it kind of hit me as being real, I showed up actually to the gym. I was a member at a gym. And I pulled up and parked the car. And I knew the world was shutting down around me, but it hadn't really soaked in. Businesses were still operating. I showed up to my gym and it was just like, you're not welcome here. I was like, huh, I guess this is really happening. And, you know, I pulled out onto the highway and I sort of looked around and I was like, huh, I'm kind of sort of the only car on the road here. And that's really, really weird and also unnerving because a lot of our business is car wrecks. And I was conflicted personally in that moment because I don't like people getting hurt, but our business is helping people who have gotten hurt. And I sort of had a little bit of an existential crisis thinking, man, we might have to make a pretty strong pivot here if we want to keep the momentum going with our organization. And it was scary for me.
Yeah. For like, just to be 100% clear, I think we all thought, okay, if there's no car wrecks, that's a good thing for the world. Nobody was questioning that. But I remember quickly looking at, okay, well, you know, we have interest in civil rights law. There's other types of, you know, will disputes that we could get into. And definitely was thinking about all the people that we employ and how we can keep, you know, not just serving our clients, but serving our people who are working with us. And getting back to sort of the feel in the office, I remember we had one lawyer who had been reading sort of voraciously everything that was coming out at the time. And then some others of us, myself included, were kind of just sort of side-eyeing it. You know, it's like, is this really going to happen? Is this really coming here? Do we have to deal with this? And I think it was that lawyer who kind of stopped us as we went into our normal staff room, you know, our normal conference room for staff meetings, and was like, hey, there's this new term called social distancing where I think we should be kind of spread out a little bit. So that was like the first time I had really employed that term in my personal life. And we all like spread out into the sort of the bullpen and had an office staff meeting from a little bit of a distance. And I remember feeling like grateful that, you know, we had a team that was watching this better than I was, and that, you know, we needed to start to like think about our priorities at the time. You know, we all were worried about our families and our jobs, and it was a time of like reflection for me. How about you, Margaret?
Yeah, we quickly, so emotionally, same. It was, I remember, you know, like hundreds of thousands, or, you know, I don't know what the number is, but a ton of other families, the lockdown started right around spring break. So we were unraveling travel plans. You know, which is such a privilege to be able to cancel a spring break trip. But, you know, we chose to, even though travel bans were not starting and the lockdown really doesn't go into effect until the following week, we canceled our spring break plans. One, because of, you know, safety concerns and health concerns. We have aging parents and just wanted to do the right thing when we didn't have a lot of information, but also the idea of being away from the organization, you know, and something that we had taken for granted, which is that we've put ourselves in the position and built an organization where you could walk away, at least at arm's length, from running the business for a week to go travel with your family. All of a sudden it became it felt really important for us to physically be present with the staff and with the business. And so, you know, there was just, that was just the beginning of really tackling COVID logistics. Which I'm sure there's a lot of businesses that have talked ad nauseum about this topic, right? But for us, we had everybody in the office that Thursday, and or maybe it was Wednesday, but I think it was a Thursday, and basically sent everybody home after our all staff meeting. And really, that office never reopened.
Right.
So over the course of the next two, first everyone went home for 2 weeks with their laptops, and we were, you know, very fortunate that we had positioned ourselves in a way that people were already working from home a little bit. We were dipping our toes in it, and people's equipment was very portable. But everyone went home on that Thursday morning, and we were going to come back 2 weeks later. And as we all know, that didn't happen. So what happens next is we all stay home for 2 weeks. We work remotely. We deal with our children for a prolonged spring break.
I don't think much work got done.
Right. But I mean, I think our staff was really so good at keeping the wheels turning, right? And then after that 2 weeks was over and we realized we weren't coming back, then the real work started.
I think it was interesting because everybody was so lost, like, right? It was such a new experience for everybody in the world at that time. And, you know, to look at that on a micro level at our organization specifically, I remember clearly, like, I personally felt conflicted about, well, what do we do here? Because kind of to your point, you are so used to working in this in-person environment, and you become convinced over just the years of doing it, of the routine of showing up and being in an office with everyone, you just assume that that's the only way that a legal practice can function. It's how we were mentored, knocking on your neighbor's door and going and talking to the person next to you about a case. And that's how Aaron and I both came up and learned how to practice law. And I, for one, was really concerned about, well, what's the right decision here? Because you've got health and wellness as a paramount concern, of course, but then you've got keeping the doors open and being able to feed our families and help everybody on our team feed their families and keep the business alive. And I think, Margaret, you did a really great job of sort of taking the, we've sort of all had our roles and what we contributed to keeping the ship afloat. But I specifically, like, we deferred to you pretty well on what's our policy going to be. Are we going to come into the office and close our doors and socially distance as mm-hmm. best you can, like a lot of organizations were doing? Or are we going to have this massive leap of faith and see what we were capable of as a team to continue moving forward and continue growing apart, not physically present with one another? And I think you did a great job of really keeping up with what was the CDC recommending? What were the guidelines? What were we supposed to do? What were the right decisions for the health and wellness mm-hmm. of the team, and really taking it by the reins and establishing that protocol? And I personally found that very relieving because it took that burden off of me. And, you know, if we were going to fail, then it was going to be your fault.
Yeah. And I think about the audience for this, and it you know, there's going to be maybe law students who want to know about running a PI business. Uh-huh. There might be lawyers who just want to hone their practice. And who knows, maybe there's some small business owners out there who are trying to learn a little bit how to be, you know, a mid-sized small organization. And the lesson that I see in that first part of COVID was to keep your head and to look at the data. You know, I think we've tried to be a data-driven organization from the beginning, but I think Margaret's presence has really brought that into focus, because, you know, it is a leap of faith until you start to get the data back. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. You know, our team is actually thriving in some ways. Now, there's some other ways where we had to come up with solutions, and we're going to, you know, kind of mm-hmm. talk about those. But, you know, Margaret, I think, correctly went to, all right, let's set some rails on this, and let's let it go down the track, and then let's get the feedback, and let's make adjustments as we go. And it was just a very logical path forward for us. And I think any business could learn from that.
Like with anything that we do, we used a values-driven model. And so what do our values tell us we're supposed to do in this time? So we educated ourselves and we educated our staff. We were transparent in what we were doing and why we were doing it. We were compassionate with both the issues that our clients may be having, but with the realities of the stressors that are inflicted upon families in this important time, right? And so allowing folks to show up in the way they needed to in that time, while still maintaining, you know, a fierce level of advocacy for the practice that we are committed to, right? And so I think when you talk about what are key takeaways that others could use in that time is, if you have, you will know your values are pointed in the right direction when you can always look back to them and say, okay, what do we do now, right? What is the next best step? Well, what do our values tell us we are supposed to do? So I think that that's, you know, while the logistics might have fallen to me, the actual execution of how we maneuvered through that time, that standard was set by you guys at the, you know, birth of the law firm when we were establishing what those values were that we were going to build everything on top of. And then it was, you know, executed by the leadership team and the staff. And so the one of the reasons why, you know, we were able to maintain a level of success through COVID and continue to utilize some of the practices that we found to be beneficial to us and our team during the time of COVID is because we had the right people in place that believed in and could embody those values that make this machine move forward. So
I want to look back and kind of talk about some of the practical things. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you really led the charge on restructuring the organization and keeping people moving forward in a positive direction. Talk about, you know, some of the steps that you remember taking to make sure that the train was kept on the tracks during that time.
So I think, you know, the first step was making sure that people had the tools they needed to do their jobs at home. So do they have the right internet speed? Do they have the right computer equipment? Everyone came and brought home their standing desks. You know, we had office chairs delivered to people's houses. And that sounds like, you know, small things or maybe not super important things, but for a team to know that we will provide them with all the tools they needed, multiple screens, like everything they need to do their job, we will deliver to them, right? So we are going to show up in their space and make sure that whatever space they have dedicated in their home functions like a, you know, normal office. And if they needed help getting that set up, we would provide that assistance, right? And so we felt that it was important that we take on that burden for them because, you know, again, people were going through a lot at that time. The other thing I think we did from a logistics perspective, and I can't recall if this was already in place pre-COVID. I think that it was, but I believe we had already established what we referred to as a pod system inside of our organization. So, you know, we are not very big. And so we don't have departments. You know, the normal organizational structure that exists in larger firms or companies with levels of hierarchy and managers and supervisors and team leads and all of that does not exist in our firm. One, because we're just not a big organization. And two, we've always really believed in having a very flat organization, that there aren't levels of importance or hierarchy or reporting structures. And so we had established what we referred to as a pod system that, and that brought groups of people together to work as a team without necessarily having leadership or management. But there were mentors or partners engaged that could provide education and that type of thing to our pods. So the way what that looks like in COVID is that we already had these small teams constructed that could support each other both in their practice and in their personal life as we moved away from a traditional in-office setting where there was a lot of door knocking and office visits and that kind of thing. And Aaron had a really good idea at the beginning of COVID to bring those folks together on a regular basis.
I stole that idea.
Would you like to tell the people the idea that you stole?
It was to have stand-ups, which when I say that phrase, there may be people that just cringe because that just evokes the sort of peak corporate response to COVID in terms of like, you know, how do we somehow get people to stay socialized? We know we can get them to work from home, but how do we get them to still know each other, like each other, stay, you know, motivate each other, educate each other? And the response was stand-ups. And I think that became so prevalent during the pandemic that there was sort of a counter response where people kind of resented having to, you know, go to these stand-ups. But in the beginning, they were saviors. You know, we needed the ability to connect with each other. And before we ever heard about Zoom fatigue and, you know, being in front of your laptop and meeting with people all day, before we heard of that, you know, we had this video conference option. I think it started with Slack and maybe we used Zoom a little bit if it got too big. And we tried to get, I think it was all the lawyers together, all the paralegals together, the leadership team together. At one time we were trying to get everybody together and that was unwieldy. But you know, the bottom line was we were able to bring people together and have a moment that ostensibly was about work, but in practice was just about them talking to each other, having coffee with each other. What challenges are you? I think that the questions were sort of like, you know, what'd you do yesterday? And what are you trying to get done today? And embedded in that was, you know, what were your challenges yesterday and what are your challenges today? So we could kind of support each other.
So for those of y'all who don't know what a stand-up is, I mean, we were just literally getting together every day on a video conference call to just check in with each other. And as I kind of look back on what that time was like, I mean, there was so much that was going on in the background. I can't even comment on the amount of work that was in. Like, a desk just showed up in my house. That was incredible.
Because I'm magic.
Stuff like that would just happen. But the stand-ups, I mean, there was a lot of fear, right? I mean, we were afraid for our health. We were afraid for our safety. We were afraid for our economic well-being. We're watching these. I remember very clearly like that video that came out of Italy where they were everyone, you know, all these Italians were talking to the rest of the world about how real and serious and terrible what we were about to get hit with was. And I felt like those stand-ups, just getting together and talking, it wasn't even about work. It was just, how are you? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? How are you managing? What's new? What's this transition like for you? What questions do you have? How can we help? And I felt like that was, like, we really went through COVID together in that way. Even though we weren't together face-to-face, we were together allaying each other's fears and telling each other that it was going to be okay, that we were going to get through it together. And it really demonstrated our commitment to support of the team. And I thought that was probably one of the most impactful things that we did during COVID to help make that transition work.
How are you washing your apples?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after we get through, you know, those first probably 30 days, then the reality sets in that we've got to figure out how we are going to assist our clients in navigating their cases through the system when the system has just absolutely changed, right? Mm-hmm. The court systems are shut down. Non-essential medical procedures and doctor's offices are shut down. All the things that are required for the progression of the lifespan of a personal injury case to go from open to close have really like been flipped upside down. So can y'all talk to us about, you know, first, what did that look like? And then second, you know, how did we counsel our clients through that very, you know, challenging time, an uncertain time?
Yeah. So two of the main ingredients of a personal injury case are documentation, which is the medical process, you know, someone going to get medical visits and a doctor discovering what's wrong with them and writing it down, and an endpoint, you know, some threat to the insurance company that if they don't figure this out, you know, we're going to go to trial and get the answer from a jury. So we kind of were robbed of both of those in the beginning. You know, the courts completely shut down. There were no trial dates that anyone could rely on. We couldn't even have, you know, in those first few days, you couldn't even have a hearing to compel the documents that you need from defense. And they, of course, were just kind of laying back, you know, not doing anything. And then the medical offices pretty reliably, you know, they could be relied on to figure out a solution. Doctors have been doing that since the dawn of time. And so they, I think they quickly scrambled and figured out that telemedicine was an option. And we, of course, were keeping our ear to the ground on that and finding out which medical offices were the most agile in that process of actually getting a reliable way to get in front of a doctor and then to turn that into a procedure that, you know, whether it's diagnostic or what. So I think in the early days, it was just sort of a lot of observation and meeting with other lawyers online to figure out what they were doing and then watching our court system unfold.
Yeah, I think, you know, you had to have some really hard conversations with people who were really wanting to have their case come to a conclusion. And there were a lot of people whose cases had ripened at that time. They were ready to be completed and brought across the finish line, maybe had trial dates set. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we can't have trials anymore. And there was a big period of time where Zoom trials, I mean, it took them a while.
Oh, in a year.
Yeah.
Like a long time.
In fact, our law school or my law school classmate was the first judge in the nation to host a virtual trial. It was of a criminal trial here in Austin. But that was national news, you know, and it took him forever to put that together. It was a ton of work for the court staff. It seems kind of like, oh, it's just a meeting online. But if you've ever been to court, you know, there are security protocols, there are logistical issues in preserving evidence and making sure the appellate record is clear. There's issues with the court reporter being able to, you know, read people's lips and take down all the information. There's issues with exhibits, you know, being marked up in real time or being preserved. And so figuring all that out was no small task for the courts. We are fortunate to be practicing in Austin, Texas, where the Travis County judges, the district judges and the county court judges got together and pretty aggressively pursued solutions, you know, for virtual hearings, virtual trials and so forth.
Yeah, they for sure kudos to the entire Travis County system for putting it together, but it still took a while. Yeah. And we still, I mean, it couldn't have been shorter. I mean, it just, it was a complete upending of a system that has been in place for hundreds of years, basically.
Right.
And retooling of that system. So you had to have a lot of difficult conversation with clients just saying, listen, you know, we've got your case ready for trial and that's the light at the end of the tunnel for you. And now your right to a jury trial has been suspended. It is postponed for some period of time, and we don't know when that's going to end. But I kind of feel like, you know, at the end of the day, we were really concerned about, well, how is this going to slow down or stop our cases from being able to be brought across the finish line? And it seems to me like the entire bar, the defense bar too, stepped up to really work cohesively to not allow a gigantic backlog of cases to develop. They continued to move cases forward. I think the insurance defense lawyers also saw that, hey, if we don't work on getting some of these cases resolved, we're going to have stacks and stacks and stacks of cases that we're never going to be able to get through, and we'll never be able to keep up with the litigation. And so the system sort of worked itself out, but it was definitely challenging for a while to help navigate our clients through that uncertain time, other than to let them know, listen, we're going to keep pushing your case forward as aggressively as we can and keep the temperature up on your case as aggressively as we can with video depositions and things of that nature until we can put enough pressure on the insurance companies to get these cases completed. And I think ultimately we did a really, really good job at that.
I agree. It was almost surprising that the insurance companies and the defense lawyers did not completely just hit the brakes and do everything they could to lay behind the log and say, you know, COVID, and not do anything. I think there is a sort of regulatory twist of fate there in the background that worked in our favor, and that is that the government requires insurance companies to hold about 50% of their reserves in cash. And by reserves, what I mean is the amount of money on each claim that they have set aside as their best guess for the ultimate settlement or judgment on that claim. And what that does is siphon a ton of cash that is investable for the insurance company into this sort of checking account. And they are pretty motivated to get that money out the door and get their books. You know, if they settle a case for under their reserves, their books actually get healthier. Their investment portfolio gets healthier. And so because of that sort of weird regulation, the insurance companies had a little bit more incentive than they otherwise would to just hold all their money and hoard the money like a dragon. You know, they were more like, all right, we got to figure this out. And so at a minimum, they were not resisting the changes that were being put in place.
Yeah.
Especially, and the Texas Supreme Court, of course, was coming out with emergency orders constantly to help guide the courts.
Well, this has been really interesting, and I think we would all agree that there were some initial reactions to COVID and impacts on our business, and now that we are several years past that first shutdown, you know, there have been some long-lasting impacts, and just like there's changes. The way we practice is different, the way the court system can function is different. So I'm excited to continue this conversation in a later episode and talk more about what our practice looks like today, post COVID, if we can ever live in an actual post COVID world. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for listening in.